Thomas McCann, and Thomas is going to discuss something which I think it was probably first highlighted by Vincent Brown when he described the savage cuts to traveller education in the region of 80%. But in fact, Thomas, and you're very welcome to the Friday edition of Northside Today, traveller funding overall has been cut by 85% in the last couple of years.
That's right, and Brian Harvey did a study, and like, I mean, you know, travellers were one of the most cut sectors of all the cuts that's taken place across the board, but particularly education. I mean, you know, there's been huge cutbacks in education. I mean, you look at the educational disadvantage among travellers, you know, you really have to ask, you know, that, and it happens to other communities as well, you know, when there's an economic downturn, a lot of the time it's the groups who's less represented where the biggest cuts take place. So, like, you know, there was huge cuts among travellers. But if you look at other supports as well for other disadvantaged communities, you see a similar pattern as well, you know. So so I think it's important that that other, you know, working people and disadvantaged communities kind of and travellers are supporting one another, because it's the people at the bottom of the you know, of the ladder that gets hit worst in an economic downturn.
And also, Thomas, of course, hit worst and hit first, I think, because the Minister for Finance at the time, if my memory serves me right, and I'm open to correction on this from you or any of our listeners, described it as low-hanging fruit.
That's right, and like, I mean, and that's you know, that has been said a few times. Again, it's a common enough phrase that's used. And the thing is that, like, if you look at that, and I mean, I know I'm kind of going into the broader picture here, but if you look at that and you see why government feels that they're able to do that, is because usually people like travellers have least amount of representatives, say, in terms of voting, when it comes to political participation or being challenged either at a local or a national level. And one of the things that certainly accountability for them cuts, you know, who holds the government accountable, you know, and a lot of the time the groups themselves are in a very disadvantaged position, so a lot of time can't hold the government accountable for the cuts that they make to these groups, such as travellers. And the impact of that, just to say, the impact of that is that there's been, like, I mean, whereas there was advances being made in terms of traveller education, particularly with into second level, and you know, kind of younger travellers staying on in secondary school, that has gone backwards since the cuts, in terms of the supports not being there for them. You know, there's still a high percentage of travellers staying in primary school, but in secondary, that has gone backwards. So that, and then if you look at third level, less than 1% of travellers are going on to third level education.
Thomas, very unfair question, but I'm going to throw this at you from left field. How many travellers, to the best of your knowledge, have attended university in Ireland?
I would say at this stage you're looking at a very small group. I was one of the travellers who went to third level, but I would say you're looking at, if you had 100 travellers out of the whole community who's gone on to third level, I think that'll be quite, you know, a high count. But I don't know, I haven't counted them exactly, but certainly it's a very small number of people out of 40,000 people who's gone on. I mean, the statistics tell us it's less than 1%, you know, but there's quite a small group of people who's gone on. It's a real, you know, kind of, I mean, I think it's about 14% in terms of settled disadvantaged communities, you know, which is still really small in comparison to the number of students from middle class and upper middle class communities that go to university, you know, which is quite high. working class disadvantaged communities, settled communities, is about 14-15%. In the travel community, is less than 1%.
Thomas, I'm going to put something to you, and please don't believe that this is my take on it or my beliefs, but there are people listening this morning who will say, what is he on about? Travellers get everything for free. They're given halting sites, they're given everything, and all they do is go out and rob all in communities, and they have no interest in working, they have no interest in being part of society by way of paying tax, and they couldn't care less about education. And I presume, Thomas, that you are aware that there are a certain, hopefully minority of people, who hold those views.
Well, I think anyone who told them views, I would say, is very ignorant of the facts, you know, really. In terms of, you know, and really kind of, you know, the unemployment level among travellers, for instance, is over 84%, which is the reverse in the mainstream. And some of the factors that's really kind of contributing to that is discrimination in the wider labour market, for instance. It's not always the educational disadvantage or the competition for jobs. It's discrimination and getting people to an interview. And some, like, travellers trying again and again for interview. If you look at the accommodation, like getting halting sites and that, you know, millions, and you might be aware of this, has been sent back to central government from local authorities, unspent in terms of traveller accommodation. And actually, this is an interesting one. Even during the downturn, millions were sent back to central government by the local authorities who failed to provide traveller accommodation. What you have now is you have overcrowding, huge overcrowding, and a lot of traveller sites, so you do. And then people who are trying to force to go into private rented accommodation, travellers, are now ending up, a lot of people are ending up homeless as a result of that. And just by the way, just an added point in that, people who do go on to group into travel group housing schemes and sites have to pay rent, the same as in, like, they don't get them houses for nothing from the state. They have to pay rent from them, you know. And people do pay taxes, you know. They pay tax on everything they get, you know. Of course, if they're employed, you know, they pay tax as well. But if you're not employed, you're not expected to pay the same tax. I'm employed, but you know, and I pay my taxes, and I'm a traveller. And most travellers who's employed pay taxes as well, you know, and want to pay taxes. So, I mean, that argument, look, we need to get beyond the ignorance, you know, and you know, kind of, and look at the reality of people's situation on the ground, you know.
Thomas, sorry, yeah, go on, continue.
No, and it's easy enough to kind of, you know, to come out with things like that and blanket statements that mean nothing and that kind of reinforce stereotypes, and that's not actually true, you know.
Yeah, well, as I said, Thomas, there are people who will hold those views, and I think no matter what is said or what is done, I'm wondering, Thomas, like, that there, as I said, there are people that hold those views, and no matter what is said and done and what evidence is placed in front of them, they're not going to change their mind.
Well, if they don't change their mind, I mean, you know, kind of, I hear what you're saying, but I mean, you know, then do we keep engaging with people who hold them views? Do we keep kind of trying to show them what the reality is if they're not prepared to change their views, and, like, no matter what you put in front of them? So, like, the thing is that, look, one thing is views. The other thing is actually kind of that people have in this country. You know, we live in a democracy, and we live in a, you know, kind of, you know, hopefully in a society that where people have certain rights, you know. And people should have a right to an education, should have a right to accommodation, and not just travellers. I mean, there's over 10,000 people homeless in this country. You know, families and living in B&Bs, you know, so there is. And you hear the same arguments about some of them from people who hold them views, and they just don't stack up. Them views don't stack up.
And that is the kernel of the thing, because, you know, there is the old phrase, Thomas, I suppose, and you've heard it no more than myself, that empty vessels make the most noise. And I think that before people express opinions, I'll rephrase this, Thomas, before people express opinions and turn them into a statement of fact, they maybe should have the facts to back up the opinion in the first place, if you know what I mean. During his
usually they're in an advantage position to say that. They wouldn't be saying the same things if the shoe was on the other foot. I can guarantee you that.
And isn't that a definite statement of fact, Thomas? During his tenure, and I'm kind of going away slightly from the topic that we're discussing, but I just want to try and cover as much with you as I can when you were good enough to give me your time this morning. During his tenure as Taoiseach, Enda Kenny and his government gave or allotted ethnic minority status or whatever you want to describe it as to the travelling community in this country.
Yeah.
The question I have for you, Thomas, was that just, you know, tea and soft words? Did it make any difference to one traveller in this country?
Yeah, I think, just to say the background to that is that traveller organisations and traveller activists has been fighting for traveller recognition as an ethnic group for over 35 years. And like, so it didn't come out of nowhere, it was fought for. I think in terms of a difference, on the ground to people's daily lives, travellers' daily lives, it hasn't made any difference at all. What it has done is it has kind of put an end to this idea that travellers are failed settled people that dropped out of the famine, you know, and that they need to be rehabilitated. I think, you know, that's important for travellers, for our own identity in terms of that, you know, this idea that we somehow were failed settled people that needed to be rehabilitated and assimilated. So it put an end to that argument. And hopefully it will set the foundation for change, both change in terms of people's, travellers' lives on the ground, if it gets a legal kind of backing. It has no legal backing. There's no legal basis. It's just kind of the state's, it's a statement, really, that the state recognised travellers as an ethnic group. But also, in the future generations, as we go forward, that it'll create change in the relationship between the majority population in this country and the traveller community. Because the mindset, particularly from the 1960s, has been this idea that travellers are really settled people who kind of need to be kind of turned back into settled people again, you know? And I think that's the, I'm going to say settled people, maybe that's that term. It's non-travellers, if you know what I mean. You know, that's the, you know, but that's there from the 60s, and that mindset and all the policies and all the practices was based on that, notion.
There was government policy there going right back to the 50s and 60s in relation to that.
Yeah, there was, and people can read that. That's online, you can look at that.
There has been some fascinating documentaries made over the years, factually correct documentaries, may I say now, as opposed to some of the other type that you see online.
And I think that's really important, that it is factual, and that, you know, and in more recent times, maybe, not just for travellers, but for travellers are Irish. I mean, you know, there's no kind of conflict between ethnicity and nationality, which people, I think, sometimes get confused. I mean, I think Peter Casey was quite confused about this, saying we're all Irish. So how can you have, you know, how can you be different? Like, you can have a number of different ethnicities, the same nationality. There's no conflict in that. And in some countries, has like, I think Nigeria has about 350 different ethnic groups, all Nigerian. So, like, you know, I think it's important for people to see that we're Irish as well. So it's important for Irish people, for Ireland, as well as for travellers.
Thomas, I have 3 minutes left, and if we were to discuss the Peter Casey situation, we'd be here until 1 o'clock to take the entire show. I want to turn it back, I suppose, on the traveller community, and insofar as we are on the cusp of local elections, we are on the cusp of European elections, and if Brexit and the dust settles on that, says he, looking for his crystal ball, we could be on the cusp of a general election.
Yeah.
What... For travellers listening this morning, if you had a message to them to get them to engage with the political system and vote, because you know as well as I do, Thomas, that a lot of the reason for this is if there was votes in it for the government, we saw it at the time with the medical cards, with the old people, they roared back fairly fast when they started calculating the amount of votes they could lose. Do you genuinely think that government look at this and say, ah, shut the hell with them, they don't vote anyway, it's not going to make any difference to us?
Absolutely, I think you're right. I mean, I said accountability earlier on. One of the ways of holding people accountable is when it comes to an election, whether it's a local election or a general election or indeed a European election, your vote is a way of holding people accountable for their actions. And I mean the same, I would say this to all people, but particularly to travellers, that traditionally travellers were excluded from the voting system in Ireland and the political system generally. And actually there's a couple of groups that's working to try and change that, a couple of travel groups. Travellers need to get registered. They need to register. They need to make sure they're registered. And this is the message I would give to all travellers. They need to make sure they're registered. But not just to register, but to actually vote, you know, when at an election. And I think that does bring change. I think it makes people, it makes politicians more aware that, look, you know, people do have a vote. And a couple of votes, you know, as been seen in the past, can swing and swing whether somebody is elected or not. And they're very aware of that. You know, and when it comes to it, I think that's what's important, that they look at who's voting and who's not voting, and they want to make sure that every single vote counts in their direction. So they are aware of it. But I would say that for travellers, I think it's really important, and particularly, I think, in the upcoming local elections, because there's a lot of, kind of, as I said, money sent back to central government, a lack of traveller accommodation being planned, overcrowding, and I think the accommodation issue is one of the biggest issues that has affected the traveller community, you know, going right back, and has been one of the the points of conflict, I think, a lot of the time between traveller and settled. And I think the local government needs to be held to account for that.
Yeah, and indeed, Thomas, and you know as well as I do, never mind that they know who votes and who doesn't vote, in parts of rural Ireland, the clever, cute and astute politicians would tell you which way people vote. They could actually tell you which candidates they vote for.
I mean, yeah, their election people look at after the ballot box, they look at where votes is coming from, they look at what areas, what way people are voting. They, you know, like that's their job, I suppose. But, you know, so they're very much aware of where votes is coming from, where they're not coming from, who's likely and who's kind of, you know. So that's all done in the course of an election campaign.
Of course, if we had the Australian system, Thomas, it wouldn't be an issue, because it is compulsory and it is a legal requirement that you exercise your franchise there. And you know something? When you look at the amount of people who don't vote and don't exercise their franchise, and when you look at how hard fought it was and how many peoples around the world would love to be in the position of having a vote, maybe it's...
Some people died in the fight to get a vote.
Correct,
I mean,
correct. And then we have people who look upon it as something flippant, and, well, Facebook and Twitter and all these things are far more important, of course, than actually going out and exercising your franchise. Thomas, will you promise that we'll come back to me and we'll talk for longer on the next occasion? But in the meantime, Thomas McCann, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It has been a pleasure. And we will definitely talk to you again, Thomas.
Okay, well, listen, thanks very much, and of course I will.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.